Off the Ball Breakfast.
Your projection now around this conversation.
No, I'm agent. I'm fascinated by you as it is. I'm even more interested in you in terms of this topic.
Live every weekday morning from 7:30 on your smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play OTB Sports Radio.
To listen to the full Sunday paper review, make sure you're a member by clicking offtheball.com/join now.
We will start with the Sunday Independent to begin with. It's the photograph of a celebrating Leinster team. It's Dan Sheehan with the champagne there on one side, Max Deegan on the other. Leinster silence critics, says the headline above Cian Tracy. Blues produce performance of savour and get their hands on the URC trophy at Croke Park. The idea of silencing the critics might be one that we'll come back to. The Sunday Times, very much the same thing. Josh van der Fleer, after his try at Croker yesterday, bullseye, it says, Leinster dominates the African visitors to lift URC title for the first time in 4 years. And then also the reporting of Paul Hurst here. A setback for United in pursuit of Sporting Gyökeres. Manchester United's hopes of signing Victor Gyökeres appear to have taken a blow after it emerged that Sporting Lisbon striker, he'd prefer a move to Arsenal. It turns out, sure, who wouldn't? I suppose. The Mail on Sunday, Blue Heaven, Leinster destroy Bulls to land their first silverware for 4 years again, celebrating Leinster. You went with less mania in this one, or a more sort of civilization here, rather than the champagne and madness, yeah, some of the other ones.
There was plenty of madness, but you didn't really get the players' faces. I do like in that one, like James Lowe is just wreaking havoc by pulling up Jack Conan's jersey.
This seems to be a thing.
Yeah, there was a lot of that going on up in the Hogan stand as well. Same, they were at it again. I don't know what the deal is.
Do you... You were editing yesterday.
Yeah, I was.
Did you pour over these things?
I did, actually, for the... Yeah, I knew I wanted a trophy presentation picture on the back and action stuff on the inside. Mm. So I had a good go through the pictures. But, like, there's such an array of pictures. Like, it's one thing I've said here before. Mm. Info and Sportsfile are just top class. And there's some brilliant pictures. Like, you could have gone with... There was really good celebratory ones. If the Josh van der Fleer one is really good, there's another Andrew Porter one where he's just...
Yeah,
so animated.
Possibly
it's incredible.
After that try, I think, as well.
Yeah, yeah, he was celebrating Josh's try. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then Shane McGrath underneath, football championship that keeps on giving more thrillers. The greatest football championship in memory produced even more drama last night. Galway beat Armagh, and more on that inside as well. Elsewhere, the Sunday World goes with that a boy, BHOY, for those on the radio. Celtic keen to snap up Ferguson and pair him up with fellow Ireland striker Ida at Parkhead. Adam Ida's like, ah, stop now, come on. Even where he is, or send him somewhere else. I have enough competition for him at Ireland. Is that a runner, do you think?
I think it. I don't think we're having anything as certain now. I think that's the thing. I mean, if we were here 12 months ago or 18 months ago, I would have thought you'd never need to play for Celtic without sort of being disparaging towards Celtic.
It wouldn't it would be a good thing, would it?
No, like I think he does need to play somewhere, but I still feel like he's a Premier League player. There is the theory of maybe he should go to the top of the championship and play games and score goals. And I do get that. I see the logic. I'm sure you could be persuaded of that if you sat down and thought about it. But I still think he has top flight attributes. And if he could get a good pre-season somewhere, like he scored a double figure number of goals in the Premier League in a calendar year as a teenager. Like, that's an exceptional level of ability. Now, I was worried in Luxembourg during the week. I've generally been quite positive around Evan. Be calm. Don't get worried. Mm. But just during the week on Tuesday, it was like, God, this isn't good at all. But I still think what Evan is paid and his contract level, I would have thought personally that would be out of Celtic's range.
The thing that has me scratching my head about it is that Fabian Hertzler hasn't seen all that stuff and gone, drawn the conclusion that this is somebody, managers convince themselves that they can pick up yeah, where somebody else couldn't. That's the whole point of the gig. That he's not going, I can make an absolute diamond out of this fella.
See, Brighton's funny though, because the whole Brighton thing is built around a business model of buying and selling. And you do get this sense that they've reached a point with Evan where now is the time maybe to sell. And it's almost like stocks and shares with them. Yeah. Kind of felt like the whole point of the loan to West Ham for me was to see could you get Evan's value back up again. But it hasn't worked that way. If anything, it's probably sent it down or it's sort of leveled out a little bit. So, but I mean, Celtic are notoriously tight when it comes to it. Mm-hmm. So I don't see how they could afford to pay the rate for Evan. Not to dispute the story. Like, I'm sure there's something in it in the sense that this information is going around the place. But from a purely financial basis, I couldn't see Celtic being able to compete from. What could happen with Evan? I kind of wonder what the best case scenario be for one of the bigger clubs who have liked him and were interested in him to sign him and loan him. Yeah. You know, I kind of wonder, could something like that maybe be it? Because I still
feel, the risk with somebody
I feel
else.
He's going to end up at a top. I still feel he has the attributes to be at a top club. Mm. Like Chelsea genuinely have wanted him in several windows. But Chelsea sometimes, as you know, like sign a player and then loan him out. Maybe something possible. Like that.
Well, yeah. Sorry, on that point of view, maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
Gold for Healy at shift end, as well as the reflections on the rugby there. The Sun has free pass. Walsh saves Galway with a hooter shoot. So Galway's win over Armagh. Slots cash, Gordon bid, Liverpool weighing up a £100 million move for Anthony Gordon, turns out. And more on that Victor Gyökeres story there. He snubbed Manchester United, says Martin Lipton here, leaving the door open for Arsenal to land the Swedish striker. The people go with Rob O'Cop. Spanish giants will make a move for Liverpool favourite Robertson. Atletico Madrid are the latest Spanish club to come in and try and steal a Liverpool defender. I thought he was like a career on the way in
Liverpool.
Like on the way out.
Oh, yeah.
But I was thinking about, you know, it wasn't, did Liverpool want him? It was more the other way around. We shall see. And then victory to Arsenal this morning. The Gyökeres won in the Sunday Mirror. United in shock as top target makes it clear that he wants to be a top gun. So that's what's happening across the back pages. I might just linger for a moment on the rugby reaction, and particularly I don't want to give the headline to Keane Tracy here because he'll be saying, I didn't say that. Leinster silence critics. So that notion, because it's been picked up a good bit, Peter O'Reilly's writing about, you know, Leo Cullen saved his job basically by winning this thing. Nothing puts Europe back in its box, but as much as you could end the season on a high, that's what they've done. So everything that was in their control, closing it out with a win, a little bit of the monkey off the back, but this isn't going to majorly change the game for Leinster. It's all about Europe, really.
No, it is. And like, look, they needed to win it. They did need to win it for a number of reasons, as people have outlined, like Peter O'Reilly said, it was sort of important for Leo. They've tried a number of things in losing seasons in the past, and it comes to a point where you eventually have to change the man at the top. So like, it was by a process of elimination getting towards that point, you'd imagine. But he made the point after the match about how, you know, they've consistently been getting to finals and semi-finals, and if you're getting to the business end, then you're not doing too much wrong. Like, hindsight is only, it's only with hindsight that you're right or wrong in a decision. So now they've won something. They still need to go on and win more and do better next year, you would imagine. I know Jordy Bard will be gone, but you've got Rico Ioane coming in, which could be interesting. Like Jake White talked about, a few of the papers carry his quotes about how Leinster is basically a team of internationals, all bar one. You've got, you know, you're sitting there and you can warm up a guy like RG Snyman and send him in. You can start Jordy Barrett. You've got absolute world-class players. So this is the very least they should be doing. And he was saying that, you know, this is what we need. We need a team full of internationals of that standard. Like, how can we possibly compete with Leinster? And it's a theme he was harping on about during the season. And when you look at it in that respect, like just winning this title in the last 4 years is a level of underachievement. I accept that you can pick each final, each defeat, each loss and say there are good reasons for it. But when you put them all together, it adds up to a sum of underachievement.
Can I ask both of you about that thing you just touched on there, the success and failure thing? So Leo Cullen comes out afterwards and he says, does getting to a final make your season a success or a failure? Unfortunately, the way you guys write, the losers of a final suddenly are failures, whereas when you get to the last two teams in the competition, you need to be able to celebrate the two teams who are in the final. We've obviously been on the flip side of that in the past at different stages. Does that deem us a failure? I personally don't think it's a failure.
Yeah, I don't know. That is the nature of sport, right? I mean, winners write the history and all of that. Like, that is the truth of it. And I suppose from a media point of view, sure, there's always an element of scoreboard journalism will be at play with these things. You know, if you have a narrow defeat, everything you've done is wrong, and you know, the flip side of that equation. But I don't know. I feel with this example, and I'm not coming at this from someone who's totally on top of the scene, but what do you think they're saying privately in there? If they'd lost yesterday, do you think that in their own debrief, in their sort of coach's room, or, you know, in the corridors of power, they're saying, well, look, you got to the final, that's something we should celebrate? Like,
no,
of course not. Yeah. You know, of course not. When everything you hear about their the setup there. You speak to anyone who's been involved and been around it, it's high performance, it's top class. Obviously, it actually just shocked me again, just they hadn't won anything since 2021. If you'd asked me sort of, you know, a pop quiz on that, I would just sort of would have assumed there'd been something more recently than that. I knew that it was the European drought, but I sort of assumed they'd picked up a URC or something along the way. So like that's a lot of big defeats for a team who, in my eye line, you're hearing that they've won a lot of games just from hearing scores, you know. So I think that's why you open yourself to mental scrutiny. If you're actually a top team that's losing a lot of narrow games, well, then you can't. It's so easy to come out and say that. But I do get it. Of course, I'm sure, like, I get why they'd be annoyed by some of the media coverage. But I think it's in some ways it's a compliment to them that people expect them. People expect them to be winning stuff.
They've enjoyed it though, haven't they? Like they've been using this as fuel for the last couple of weeks. Like, you know, you had Joe McCarthy saying that everybody loves to hate Leinster, and somebody else said, you know, we're not proving anybody wrong, we're proving ourselves right. And you get the feeling that they've used this as fuel. And you would like to think that harsh conversations have been had in there, and that like they're surely more rigorous and strict on themselves than as, you know, or at least as much as the media are. You know, is Leo Cullen not demanding more of his players? Like they didn't put in a performance that they would be happy with in their Champions Cup defeat. And that's like, there's no disputing that. So if they're unhappy with it, they have to correct that. They'll feel that they've done that and that they've shown up and, you know, put something right in the last few weeks. But we'll see next season how it goes.
What happens in a dressing room, Shane, in that sort of environment where, you know, team hasn't necessarily achieved what they want? There's obviously an outward message. But that point about from Leo Cullen, because I think in a business sense, like it makes total sense. You make decisions. Sometimes it results in success and sometimes not. But internally, I presume there's a lot more rigor going on.
Yeah, and I think it depends on the circumstance of the individual team. You know, if you're a plucky underdog that's made it all the way to the final and are just beaten by a better setup, well then, I don't think that really washes with Leinster in this case. So I think it is a bit case by case basis, but I think they're, I know, I like you said, this kind of siege mentality they've been trying to create, I'd say they're verbalising what they want to believe for the moment. And I'm sure you're dead right. The conversation behind closed doors now that they've parked this, they're on a bit of a hiding to nothing yesterday, really. Like, you know, win and Ashford's only this and lose, and it adds to the disaster of what's been the last few weeks. So I don't know. I think it does depend team by team. I think, I look at Northampton. I think Northampton losing that final to Bordeaux can turn around and say, yeah, we did pretty well here. You know, great achievement getting to this. Disappointing not to win, absolutely. I don't think the same can be said for Leinster with the resource. And I don't mean in an unfair way, I just mean with the quality that they have. Like I think they're trying to convince themselves of something until they sit down and do the real debrief. And I think they had to do that because they had to get their heads around seeing out the season that way.
Yeah. If you're like, they're the Dublin footballers of this scenario. Like, and it's very, I don't know, from a Meath point of view, when you get beaten from every other team in Leinster and most other teams in the country, but when you get beaten by Dublin again, there's far less rigour in the aftermath of that, I presume, than there would be like if it was another Leinster team, for example.
Sometimes there's more, unfortunately, because it hurt that bit more. But yeah, no, I do think you have to look, like when you do that like cold hard analysis, you have to look at like, well, did we do everything right in our preparation, selection, performance, set up, all the rest, and why are the opposition just better than you? Because like that can just happen, and there can be very little to adjust that. Or you see, well, okay, could we have mitigated against this slightly differently by doing it this way? So I that's where I go back to what I'm saying. I think how you reacted very much depends on where you're coming from, and like a cold hard analysis of what they did. I thought, again, without being a rugby expert, I thought the quotes from Leo Cullen in the aftermath of that Northampton game saying we're going to pick our best team going forward now, and all of a sudden one of the best players in the world is in this best 15 for the remaining games, and believe it or not, plays pretty well. I think that's I think, you know, there's that would suggest to me, if they're like doing that cold hard analysis of, well, did we get everything right in advance of that Northampton game, they mightn't feel they did. Whether that was forced upon them or not, there still seems to be a feeling about that. Yeah,
they just didn't turn up in the way that you would normally expect.
And they did admit themselves afterwards, like Leo said it, that they got ahead of themselves.
Yeah.
Like he's as good as said, we were thinking too far ahead here.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah. No putting it back in the box until next year, and then the pressure mounts up again. We'll get you a few GAA scores and then we'll get on to some other bits and bobs. We might go first of all to Killian Whelan, who's in Port Laois for Louth against Clare. Killian, in the final round of games in Group 3.
How you doing, Adrian? Hope you can hear me over the din, because Samuel Roy has just put Loud in a commanding position at 1-5 to 4 points. It looked a bit ropey for them in the first 10 minutes when they conceded three great scores from Clare, who really burned themselves out of the traps. They kicked 3 points in the space of 90 seconds with Emmett McMahon, a late change into the Clare side, Owen Cleary and Mark McInerney. But Loud looked a bit tentative in that opening 10 minutes, were overturned on a couple of occasions. Then though, Clare had a couple of clear-cut opportunities. They really should have got 2 points out of it. That gave Loud a little bit of, I suppose, confidence. And here they go again now. Craig Lennon getting through. Humps the ball once. Tip Thompson around the keeper. Has a shot, but there's players back on the line. He really should have put that to the back of the net. Would have been an incredible goal, but 1-5 to 4 it is here. 20 and a half minutes gone. This game really starting to bubble along, but just already though, some of the clear body language just starting to drop a little bit. That goal from Sam Woolroy, a cracking effort, and coming up at 21 minutes gone here, Adrian, Loud seem to be in their groove here now, and this could be curtains for Clare in some way, unless they arrest what's going on in the middle of the field.
Okay, we hit the right man at the right time, Killian. Thank you very much for that. The other scores, Shane, in terms of what's going on around Tailteann Cup.
Yeah, so Westmeath have opened up a bit of a lead again there. They're 2-12 to 1-8 up against Wicklow. Looks like a bit of a win there in the second half. Went on a run there with 2-pointer and another Luke Loughlin free just to open back up that lead again. And then Monaghan are 10-7 up on Down at the moment. Monaghan came out really strong. The first 3-0 up after the first 9 minutes and looked really energetic, really accurate in what they were doing. And it took a massive Pat Haveran 2-point free to kind of settle down into the game. They've been way better since, been very even. And he's hit another huge 2-pointer from play in the last couple of minutes. So, yeah, tasty game up there at the moment too.
Good stuff. We'll continue to keep an eye on that. So we want to get to the golf and we'll do that in a second. But, Orly, you wanted to mention two concepts that create major divisions, one being the Lions and the other being Stephen Jones.
Oh, yeah. Stephen Jones is very interesting. They talk about, there's a piece in the Sunday Times where they're kind of talking about how the Lions are going to fare, and it's touched on a few places, because next Friday we've the warm-up game, don't we, the Lions in Dublin against Argentina. But there's one, and is a nice read, is with Rob Henderson, where it's a good chat in that. But in the Stephen Jones piece, there's him, Owen Slott, Lawrence Dallaglio, and Mark Palmer talking about the big talking points around the upcoming tour, and Stephen Jones, never one to swim with the crowd, is suggesting that the Lions are up against it, and that they're going to, that also that Andy has picked too many Irish players. Andy has gone back too far, and with too many players from before he was Lions coach, I think there are a lot, there are too many ordinary players, and a lot of them are Irish.
Yeah.
And he's suggesting that in comparison to sort of previous Lions squads, this one doesn't measure up very favourably, and he's not expecting them to do very well down in Australia.
Yeah, he's cranky.
He is a little bit, yeah. There's a few reasons for it. Like Rory Keane is a piece talking about what is facing them heading down under, and he's making the point that, like, A, Joe Schmidt is going to want to do, you know, well here, and B, there's a lot of underrated players on the Australia side, and particularly in the scrum, which has traditionally been a weakness of theirs, and now the Lions are down people like Tadhg Furlong and a couple more key forwards. So it'll be interesting to see how it turns out.
To listen to the full Sunday paper review, make sure you're a member by clicking offtheball.com/join now.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
Your projection now around this conversation.
No, not projecting. I'm agent. I'm fascinated by you as it is. I'm even more interested in you in terms of this topic.
Live every weekday morning from 7:30 on your smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play OTB Sports Radio.